cannot help this case. You cannot help the loudest if you just know things about the killing.
I know Nanay, Jennifer's mother, felt betrayed because she had received a personal promise from President Rodrigo Duterte that Pemberton would not be given special treatment or walk free.
This is clear proof of the widespread injustice that trans people and trans communities face in the Philippines and elsewhere. This is what the pardon means. If you're white, you're male, and you're American, you can get away with murder.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Queers and their allies mourn the loss of notorious ally RBG. A UK employment tribunal protects gender variance under the Equality Act. And aftershocks continue in the wake of a U.S. Marine trans killer's pardon. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Melanie Keller.
And I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities for the week ending September 19th, 2020. U.S. Supreme Court Associate Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg lost her battle with pancreatic cancer on September 18th. Ginsburg was 87 years old and died at her home in Washington, D.C., surrounded by family members. She was appointed to the court by President Bill Clinton in 1993. Ginsburg's death creates a worrisome vacancy. In a 5-4 conservative Supreme Court majority, she was a stalwart champion of women's rights and a progressive voice. Over the years, she weighed in to support marriage equality, reproductive choice, voting and immigration rights, and affirmative action. In a case challenging the constitutionality of the Defense of Marriage Act, she questioned its proponents' argument that marriage should be exclusively heterosexual.
You're saying, no, there are two kinds of marriages, the full marriage and then the sort of skim milk marriage.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg's passing gives Donald Trump a chance to add to the conservative majority he secured with the appointments of Justices Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh. Gorsuch notably disagreed with his conservative colleagues and wrote the recent ruling that LGBTQ people are protected in federal law from workplace discrimination.
Ginsburg was reportedly holding on as long as she could. National Public Radio Supreme Court reporter Nina Totenberg wrote that just days before her death, Ginsburg dictated a statement to her granddaughter. She said, "My most fervent wish is that I will not be replaced until a new president is installed." Trump and the Republican-controlled Senate are not likely to honor her wishes. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has already announced that he intends to fill the vacancy before the administration's term runs out. Soon after hearing the news of Ginsburg's passing, Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden reminded McConnell that the senator refused to consider a high court nominee by Barack Obama in 2016 during his last 10 months in office.
The voters should pick the president, and the president should pick the justice for the Senate to consider.
There are now less than 50 days before the presidential election.
A short list of prospective Trump nominees to the High Court has already deeply disturbed LGBTQ advocates. Candidates include longtime senatorial opponents of LGBTQ equality Ted Cruz of Texas, Tom Cotton of Arkansas, and Josh Hawley of Missouri. Also on the list are Paul Clement, who represented congressional conservatives supporting the Discriminatory Defense of Marriage Act, and former U.S. Solicitor General Noel Francisco, who has argued in favor of business owners' right to base anti-LGBTQ discrimination on their religious beliefs. A statement released by queer legal advocacy group Lambda Legal warned that the list is teeming with individuals who have alarming anti-LGBTQ and anti-civil rights records, which could be disqualifying for any judicial nominee, let alone a nominee for the Supreme Court.
In another high court, Hong Kong LGBTQ people won one and lost one this week. Justice Anderson Chow Ka-ming ruled on both cases on September 18th. He decided that Edgar Ng Han Lam had the right to leave his estate to the husband he legally married in London, Henry Lee Yik Ho. The couple still has a pending lawsuit arguing that their legal marriage entitles them to government-subsidized housing. However, In another case, Justice Chow ruled that Hong Kong did not need to recognize local gay lawmaker Jimmy Shem's legal marriage to another man in New York in 2013. The judge decided that existing Hong Kong statutes simply don't allow it and called Shem's effort too ambitious and unsustainable as a matter of law. Chow did acknowledge that current statutes are vulnerable to further challenge.
A U.S. federal judge ruled on September 11th for rights denied to queer couples before they were allowed to legally wed. The U.S. District Court for the Western District of Washington found that long-term pre-equality partners are entitled to their spouse's survivor benefits. Helen Thornton had claimed those benefits based on her 27-year relationship with Marge Brown, who died in 2006. The state of Washington, where they lived, opened legal marriage to same-gender couples 6 years later. Judge James L. Robart decided that denying Thornton survivor benefits was unconstitutional. He further certified the case as a national class action so that there's now a chance for others like Thornton to get federal benefits despite the lack of a legal marriage. Thornton issued a statement through her attorneys at Lambda Legal saying, "We gladly paid into the Social Security system through our jobs, and it is an enormous relief to know I'm entitled to the same financial protections that are available to surviving heterosexual spouses."
Non-binary and gender-fluid people are now protected from workplace discrimination under the UK's Equality Act. An employment tribunal ruled on September 14th that bias based on gender reassignment is included in the provisions of the 2010 legislation. Engineer Rose Taylor had been making vehicles at Jaguar Land Rover for more than 20 years when she began coming to work in women's attire. After that point, Birmingham employment judge Patrice Hughes agreed that Taylor had been subjected to insults and abusive jokes at work and had been harassed over her use of bathroom facilities. The decision clarifies the uncertainty as to whether or not the Equality Act does indeed protect non-binary people under the law's gender reassignment characteristic. Judge Hughes wrote that gender is a spectrum and that it's beyond any doubt that the protections apply to people with diverse gender expression or identity. The Guardian reports that a follow-up hearing will be held in October to determine what damages Taylor should be awarded. After contesting the case, the vehicle manufacturer issued a statement insisting that Jaguar Land Rover does not tolerate discrimination of any kind. While an employment tribunal ruling does not establish legal precedent, it is expected to influence the outcome of similar cases. A statement from leading UK queer rights group Stonewall calls the decision a milestone moment in recognizing the rights of non-binary and gender-fluid people.
And as the new school term begins in England this month, there seems to be a disconnect between the attitudes parents may claim to hold and what they want their children to know. All primary schools are now required to include LGBTQ people in discussions about different types of families. Secondary schools must include sexual orientation and gender identity in sex education classes. Surveys have found overwhelming acceptance among the British public for lesbian, gay, and bisexual people, but Britons are not so sure when it comes to teaching younger children about them. The Cantor Research Group conducted a survey of about 2,400 people who are at least 16 years old between July 8th and August 6th of this year. 4 in 10 people said that they don't want 6-year-olds to be taught that it's okay to be queer. Parliament passed the education mandates in March 2019 after a number of religiously conservative parents in Birmingham pulled their children out of diversity education classes. The legislation specifies that all LGBTQ-related education is sensitive and age-appropriate. Parents must be consulted in developing the curricula. However, they're not allowed to opt their children out of those classes. UK Cantor Chief Executive Craig Watkins told Reuters that while the country has come a long way, in his words, this study shows that social progress is not guaranteed.
Finally, the infamous fast food chicken chain, led by proudly anti-queer Christian right-wingers, has abandoned the flap circling the San Antonio, Texas International Airport. The gauntlet was thrown down in October 2019 when the San Antonio City Council approved a measure that prohibited Chick-fil-A from opening at the airport. They cited the company's record of donating literally millions of dollars to anti-LGBT groups and causes. That led the Republican-controlled Texas state legislature to pass a bill specifically banning bias against companies because of their faith-based anti-queer policies. Even though the city finally relented, Chick-fil-A announced on September 14th that it would not be arriving at San Antonio's airport after all. No specific reason, just that they have other outlets in the city and are not pursuing a location in the San Antonio airport at this time. Mayor Ron Nirenberg thinks it's time to park the contentious issue in the hangar, saying, "We're in the middle of a pandemic and a recession. San Antonio has bigger issues on its agenda."
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending September 19th, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. It's written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. For This Way Out, I'm Michael Taylor Gray. Stay healthy.
And I'm Melanie Keller. Stay safe.
Welcome to This Week in Trump, also starring George Stephanopoulos and Wade Crowford.
And we are going to be okay. We're going to be okay. And it is going away. And it's probably going to go away now a lot faster because of the vaccine. It would go away without the vaccine, George.
It would go away without the vaccine?
Sure. Over a period of time. Sure. With time. It goes
away. And many deaths.
And you'll develop herd, like a herd mentality. It's going to be herd developed, and that's going to happen. That will all happen.
Got to take a quick
break.
But
I really believe we're rounding the corner, and I believe that strongly.
As you know, Dr. Fauci disagrees with that.
Well, I mean, but a lot of people do agree with me.
We want to work with you to really recognize the changing climate and what it means to our forests, and actually work together with that science. That science is going to be key. If we ignore that science and sort of put our head in the sand and think it's all about vegetation management, we're not going to succeed together protecting Californians.
Okay. It'll start getting cooler.
You just watch. I wish science agreed with you.
Hey, well, I don't think science knows, actually.
Outrage continues in the Philippines and among international human rights organizations about the pardon and release of the U.S. Marine who killed trans woman Jennifer Laude in 2014. This Way Out's Lucia Chappell brings us the disturbing new chapter in the story of Ganda.
President Rodrigo Duterte himself granted the pardon to Lance Corporal Joseph Scott Pemberton, who was found guilty of killing Jennifer Laude when he discovered she was transgender during a sexual encounter. The story became known around the world because of a 2018 film whose director appeared on This Way Out when it was released.
The club was a frequent hangout for sex workers known as Pocahontas, a riff on pokpok, a Tagalog term for slut, which also alludes to the former colonizers who often patronized them. The most dogged of these women, those who quickly latch on to the arms of the men pouring off the ships, are usually transgender, but the foreign soldiers rarely learn that.
That was journalist Meredith Talusan in the film Call Her Ganda. I'm Christopher Gall. We're talking with director P.J. Raval about his film Call Her Ganda.
The film centers around Jennifer Laude, who was a trans woman in the Philippines that unfortunately was killed by a U.S. Marine. And the story really takes place when it's discovered that local authorities cannot detain the Marine due to these visiting forces agreements between the two countries.
When did you first hear about Jennifer Laude's story? How did you find yourself making the film?
Yeah, so Jennifer was killed October 11th of 2014. And I happened to be in the Philippines shortly after. And I happened to meet attorney Virginia Suarez, which is how I got very interested in the story.
You cannot help this case. You cannot help the Laudes if you just know things about the killing, if you just know things about the murder, because it's not a simple case of murder.
I kind of knew there were certain aspects I wanted to follow about this story. So the first was definitely Nanai, Jennifer's mother. She was really one of the inspirations of making the film.
She was working at a beauty salon. At the salon, she would wash and clean to get free food. Every week, she would send me all her money. And she promised, "Mom, when I come home, they will not make fun of me and call me a queer. I will have accomplished something. My life has value," she said.
Early on, I felt pressured from other people to make a true crime drama, for instance. And I said, well, if you do make some kind of true crime, like, you might be overlooking other things here that are really important. And for me, the film really isn't about the crime itself. For me, it's about the environment of how a crime like this comes to be, and also what is the accountability for it, and what is the prevention of stopping something like this. So if we are looking at something that's kind of about, something that's more about structural inequality, for instance, you have to look at the bigger picture, and you have to understand not only the bigger picture, but how that affects people in their daily lives. So you can't really look at one without looking at the other.
There's a lack of justice in many trans people's lives. If members of our community are killed every day, then there is no justice in the world.
Christopher Gall reconnected with PJ Raval after Pemberton's release was announced.
Pemberton's early release came as a shock to a lot of people, and I think it was really shocking and highly disappointing to the Laude family in particular. Malou Laude, Jennifer's older sister, felt betrayed, right? She felt that Pemberton had escaped the Philippine judicial system. I know Nanai, Jennifer's mother, also felt betrayed because she had received a personal promise from President Rodrigo Duterte that Pemberton would not be given special treatment or walk free. When the absolute pardon hit, I think that's when it put it all into perspective for me, that once again, Jennifer Laude and Pemberton are both kind of pawns in this larger game, right? Between the United States and the Philippines, in this game of diplomacy and this game of imperialism, in this geopolitical, relationship that's happening. And the more that I read about it and the more that I understood the conditions of Pemberton's release and understanding that it potentially is part of a greater deal between the United States and the Philippines and increased militarization, that it's true. It actually has nothing to do with the life or the loss of Jennifer Laude. It just has to do with the significance of a Marine being held in the Philippines. And I think that truly is sad. Speaking to Naomi Fontanos, right, who's one of the trans activists who's heavily featured in my film, she really put it into perspective for me. She said, not only is this a continuation of American imperialism in the Philippines, but she said, we also should take note of when this is happening, right? When also the United States is coming to a reckoning of its racist past, right? And the structural inequalities that are happening. And is this an example of white supremacy?
I also got to talk with Naomi Fontanos, executive director of GANDA, Gender and Development Advocates Filipinas.
The fight is not over. We will continue to resist, especially the maneuverings of this administration to render invisible the visibility that Jennifer Laude's case brought to our community, and to render moot the little victory that Jennifer Laude's legacy has left, which is to convict and jail for the first time in history an American serviceman who has committed a crime in Philippine soil. So we will continue to tell her story. We'll continue to use her story as an example of the treachery of this government and how we have all fallen victim to its authoritarianism, its tyranny, and its fascism. Also, an opportunity for us to continue our advocacy as socialist feminists who are, you know, interrogating systems of oppression not only on the basis of class, race, or ethnicity and gender, but as well as on the basis of imperialism and colonialism. Because really, this case is such an embodiment of our intersectional feminist politics. Everything that we are fighting against is captured by this case, that here you are, you have a trans woman, a victim of gender inequality, of gender-based violence, racism, also a victim of the capitalist economic system that has kept her poor and made her family poor. And now you cannot deny how the continuing imperialism of the United States in the Philippines also plays such a large role and casts a shadow, a dark shadow over this case. And that is really the legacy of American colonialism in the Philippines. And I really hope that many people who will see this will realize that while your country is now undergoing a reckoning with its racist history, you should extend this reckoning to the former colonies of the U.S. Empire, because it's still winning here in our islands.
What are the next steps? What are you planning, your strategy from here with the organizations in the Philippines around these issues?
We have been working with our feminist allies, our allies in the anti-imperialist movement and other social justice movements to keep on advocating for genuine justice in our country. Because in spite of the fact that Pemberton was convicted, we have always believed that it was only partial justice because he was charged with murder but was convicted of homicide, which is a degree lower. And then he was supposed to serve 12 years. Then it was commuted to just 10 years. And then now he's been pardoned. And so this is clear proof of the widespread injustice that trans people and trans communities face in the Philippines and elsewhere. And that is why the fight to make trans lives matter, to say that trans lives are important, not only in words, but also in deed and in action, will continue. Because with this case, the message is clear. A trans life does not matter, especially a trans person of color's life, because this is what the pardon means, that in the end, if you are white, you're male, and you're American, you can get away with murder outside the U.S. and in the U.S. as well. So as trans activists, while we are fighting transphobia, gender inequality, trans misogyny, we should also join the fight against capitalism, against the evils of racism, against the evils of imperialism, the evils of patriarchy, because these are all structures of oppression that we continue to face in the Philippines and in the U.S. as well. And so our analysis must be clear, our analysis must be sharp, and we must not end up becoming double agents of the patriarchy, where we are standing up for our communities as trans people, and yet we are also supporting traditional institutions of oppression, like the police or the military in both our countries. And we must anchor our activism in the social realities and the history of our people and find commonalities to fight all these systems of oppression that we're facing as trans people, as people of color. There is hope. That is the thing that we shouldn't lose, especially in these dark times. Yeah. In your context, it's very important because you have just lost an advocate of equality in the Supreme Court bench, and you are also facing a presidential election. And so all these things are connected with each other.
When it became clear,
PJ Raval,
right, and Pemberton was headed to the airport, boarding a military plane and flying off, it was the first time that I realized the story is far from over, right? Because now Pemberton's going to come back to the United States. And now what, right? Will the Marines discharge him? Will they keep him enlisted? Will he be court-martialed? I already know that he's not going to be court-martialed in the United States. From my understanding, because he's now considered serving time and sentenced in the Philippines, he can't be tried again in the United States. So I do have a lot of questions, you know, like, yes, it might close the chapter in the Philippines, but it definitely opens a new chapter here. Like, what is the future of someone like Pemberton? And what does that say about our military, right? If the Marines cannot court-martial him, if he does not serve any additional time, does he just go back into service? I mean, I know for a fact that he was getting still a monthly paycheck from being in the Marines while he was being held in his facility, but part of me wonders if he's going to be able to continue that strategic silence. Will he cycle out of the news? Will no one be paying attention to whether or not the military takes any action for his crimes or not? It's clear that he won't go back to the Philippines, but who's to say he won't end up in another country in service somewhere? And that is something that I don't think I had really been thinking about. I had always been thinking about the symbolic nature of him being in the Philippines, right? But now he's gone, right? Now he's back in the US. And I guess I'm just starting to realize, what does that mean? And what is his future going to be? And how that even further defines why this is even more meaningful for us to be paying attention.
That was filmmaker PJ Raval. For This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell.
For more information about PJ's film, check out callherganda.com. You can connect with Naomi Fontanos and Gender and Development Advocates Filipinas on Facebook at Ganda Filipinas. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Melanie Keller and Michael Taylor Gray, produced by Brian DeShazer, and by Lucia Chappell, with a big thank you to Christopher Gall. Stevie Wonder and Jason Mraz performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to Kicking Assets Fund at the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and donors Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on CKUW Winnipeg, Manitoba, KGNU Denver, Boulder, Ward, and Fort Collins, Colorado, WERU Bangor, Maine, and a wide array of community, terrestrial, and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy and stay tuned.